Hello, welcome to The Plants We Eat, an investigation of the history, biology, and culture of the plants that we use for food. I'm Jeff Gilman, director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens and plant history enthusiast.
I'm Cindy Proctor, instructor at Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte and a landscape urban consultant.
And today we're going to talk about like the oldest food that you can imagine. Maybe you can imagine one older.
It's pretty old.
It's pretty old.
Yes.
It's about as old as...
Biblical old.
It is definitely biblical old. Like wearing on your loins, biblical old. This is the fig. This is the story of the fig. The fig is originally from Asia Minor. And for those of you who don't know what Asia Minor is, I actually looked this up because, you know, I think Asia Minor, where exactly is Asia Minor? It's like minor part of Asia. It's actually pretty much what we call present-day Turkey, or at least around that region, kind of that southwestern region of Asia. The common fig is probably the oldest cultivated plant that we've got out there, but there are actually 800 or somewhere around 800 species of figs. Have you learned a bunch of different types of figs when you were learning ornamentals?
Not at all.
Really?
We just learned like two.
Okay. Because there's the climbing fig, the banyan tree, there's an incredible number of figs. If you live in the southern part of the United States, particularly California and Florida, you've probably got a couple of different types of figs in your house.
Well, of course. Oh, yes, of
right?
course.
And you've got figs growing outside. There's a tremendous, tremendously huge number of types of figs used for ornamentals. For the figs that we eat, there are pretty much two types of figs we eat. Those are the sycamore fig, which I say we eat it. Truth is, we rarely eat it, but it is out there. And there's the common fig. And we're going to spend most of today talking about the common fig. Now, figs, as you guys who eat figs probably know, have an incredibly high concentration of sugar. And before sugar cane, before sugar beets, in the Americas, there was maple syrup. That was the sugar over here. And over in Europe and Asia, it really was figs that produced the sugar. If we look at the fruits that contain sugar, fig is really number one. It's up there as number one. Behind figs, you've got the lychee. For those of you who knows lychee, we'll do that in an upcoming show. Cherries, mangoes, grapes, all of these are behind figs. If you're looking at four figs are going to have about 32 grams of carbs. So
wow,
yeah, they're stuffed with sugar, but they taste great. Do you like figs?
I do like figs. I mean, they're not on my top, five favorites, but
if somebody serves them,
I love
you,
growing. I think it's a great plant to grow, so I'm excited to talk about that.
Now, the story of the fig is really a story of a wasp. I mean, really, the story of the fig, the story of the wasp. And that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit today. I guess I should start before we get into the wasps. We should get into how long people have been cultivating figs. And there's some evidence that this started 11,000 years ago, but that's actually argued quite a bit, and I'll tell you why it's argued a little bit later. In the United States, Spanish missionaries brought figs to California in 1520. Those are actually called the mission fig. It had one name in Spain, then was brought here. The name changes, which actually happens a lot with all these different things. But again, the story of fig and man is only kind of interesting. The story of fig and wasp, now that is a story.
That's the story. Okay.
Okay. So let's start here. If you're walking through a natural fig grove, okay, in Asia or Europe, you will find basically three types of figs. The first type is a fig that you won't eat. It's called a capra fig. Tiny little fig, and it's full of wasps. It really is. The second type of fig is the big, beautiful, luscious fig, which will still have a wasp in it. But it's what we think of when we think of figs. It's this,
okay.
It's this bigger fig. And then the third type is actually much like the second. It's a big, luscious fig, but it's slightly different. We don't find as many of them. I'm going to talk about what they are now. The thing you have to understand with figs is that they're a dioecious crop. Okay, what do I mean by dioecious? And actually, it gets more complicated than that. But we're going to start. They're actually gynodioecious. Okay, yeah, no, let's not get into it too. They're a dioecious crop, which means they're separate males and females. Okay, now I'm going to take it a step further. They're gynodioecious, which means not only they're separate males and females, but there's a separate females, and the males, well, they're not entirely just males. There's female too. So there's female trees, and there's male trees that have some females in there. Okay? Now, I'm going to make it tougher. The fig that you eat, you know, normally you eat something like you eat an apple or you eat a peach. That comes from a flower.
That's right.
The fig, it's not really the case. When you eat that fig, you're eating a stem.
You can't see the flower.
Exactly. It's a stem.
Yes.
Okay, so here's how you need to think about it. It's a toilet paper roll.
Okay.
Okay. So it's this cardboard toilet paper roll. That's the stem. Then inside that toilet paper roll, you have flowers. Okay? Those flowers on a female tree are female flowers on the inside of that toilet paper roll. On the male tree, there are male and female flowers on the inside of that toilet paper roll. Okay? Makes sense so far?
Yes.
Okay, now.
Sort of.
Okay. Now, the male and female flowers, the trees with the male and female flowers, these are called caprifigs. And these were once thought to be the wild type. Aristotle talked about these. And these were thought to be the wild type figs. And then it was thought that the female trees were the domestic figs. That's actually not the case at all. So let me tell you about the biology here. Inside the male caprifigs, these wild type caprifigs they used to think of as wild, you would have male and female wasps. Okay. And a female wasp would actually, so let's say we have the caprifig without any wasps in it to begin with. Because of course, to begin with, we have this little stem, we have these flowers inside. There is no wasp. Well, a wasp, fig wasp, by the way, fig wasp finds its way into the caprifig. When the fig wasp finds its way into the caprifig, again, the male and female flowers, what the wasp does is it crawls around in there and spreads pollen from the male to the female flowers. Then the wasp lays eggs, and it lays eggs in the female flowers. Okay, literally lays eggs in the female flowers. What happens is that these female flowers actually turn into these galls, and the caprifig ends up filled with these galls, which have both male and female wasps in them, okay? So to reiterate, we've got this stem full of male and female flowers. The female wasp has gone in there. It has spread pollen from the male to the female flowers. But while it's doing this, it has also laid eggs in essentially all of the female flowers. So now we have wasps developing in all the female flowers, okay? Then the male wasps emerge. When the male wasps emerge, they inseminate the females while they're still trapped in the galls. Way to go, male wasp.
I know.
And then after they do that, the male wasps burrow out of the caprifig. Okay, the male wasp burrow out. Then the female wasp comes out of the flowers. She's already inseminated, and she exits the caprifig. When I say it chews its way out, you have to understand that the female originally came in the base of that of that stem with all those flowers, and then the base closed up. So the only way to get out was for the males to actually chew their way out. Males chew their way out, then the females exit. When the females exit, if the wasp is lucky, when the females exit, they go to another caprifig, another male fig, and they enter and they get to lay their eggs. If the female isn't lucky, she enters a female tree, okay, with that same toilet paper tube with female flowers on the inside. But here's the thing. This is where it gets really interesting. The female flowers on this female tree, their pistil, the female part of the flower,
right,
is super long. The wasp cannot get her ovipositor, how she lays eggs, she can't get her ovipositor to the actual flower itself. So she has this pollen from the caprifig where she started, from the male flowers in that caprifig. She has spread the pollen to this female plant. She spread the pollen among all of these female flowers, but she can't fertilize, she can't lay her eggs inside these female flowers. She's a tool.
So it's good for the fig, but not for her.
It's good for the fig,
but not for the wasp.
Because we'll have seeds. Seeds will develop in all of those female flowers, but no wasps will develop. And many of your figs then have a dead wasp in them, a dead, sad female who tried to reproduce and who couldn't do it. So for many figs, they're reliant upon this
mechanism
yeah. for reproduction.
And nature, isn't it? I think it's fascinating.
So here's the thing. Here's the thing that's interesting. Most of the figs that you buy today actually don't need this. Now there are some. There's one particular type of fig. They're called Smyrna figs, and Smyrna figs need this relationship. Okay, the Smyrna figs need this relationship. And we can buy different types of Smyrna figs. And these Smyrna figs, again, they've been fertilized by the wasp, and they have these seeds in them. And because they have these seeds in them, they have a particular taste. But not all figs need to be fertilized in this way that we eat. There are what's called parthenocarpic figs, which means that the fruits will actually develop without fertilization. If you've ever heard of the Calamurna fig, have you heard of a Calamurna fig?
No.
Okay. A Calamurna fig, and it stands for California Smyrna. The California Smyrna fig, the Calamurna fig, actually does require this kind of fertilization. If the Calamurna fig does not have this kind of fertilization with the wasp, then it won't produce any.
It's just
any,
a tree.
Right.
Or a bush. Yeah.
But when you have a Calamurna fig, it actually has a nutty flavor from the seeds inside. On the other hand, most of the different figs that you're used to, and there are a number of them out there, those are parthenocarpic. Those don't require a wasp, but they have a slightly inferior flavor because they don't have that seed set. So I want to go back to the beginning of the talk where we said that we have evidence from 11,000 years ago that people ate figs. Well, the evidence that we have from 11,000 years ago is the fact that we saw figs from the Gilgal in the Jordan Valley. This is actually a site that was excavated in Gilgal. What they found was figs that were parthenocarpic. And they made the assumption that because there were these parthenocarpic fruits, those were selected by humans and grown by humans. So that was evidence that humans were cultivating them. The interesting thing is, after this paper came out showing that these figs in Gilgal were parthenocarpic, after that, there was actually a paper that came out saying this isn't evidence at all, because in natural populations of figs, you will see some parthenocarpic figs. Parthenocarpic figs actually are not that odd.
So, no, not at all.
Right, exactly. So it wasn't that strange that they saw this. So the evidence we have that figs have been cultivated by man for 11,000 years isn't actually very good evidence at all, interestingly enough. So again, the figs, just the most amazing story with the wasps. I mean, and the funny thing is, you know, I just went through this long explanation. I've got to tell you something. Look up fig wasps, and it's a rabbit hole. You can spend days studying fig wasps, and I've given you an abbreviated, simplified version. It gets much more complicated.
It's uncommon that a blossom is in the stem.
It is. It's very uncommon.
And, I mean, you know, I can get that it's fertilized with a wasp. Mm-hmm. You know, I can understand that. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to wrap my head around that it's, you know, we're not going to ever enjoy the flower of it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, because it's an interesting looking plant as it is, because it you don't need it to flower. It has really great looking leaves, and the figs, the fruit on it's great, and it's easy. Easy to grow.
Fig is incredibly easy to grow. I mean, we've talked previously about how the apple is practically a Frankenstein's monster. Fig, you grow it on your own.
You shouldn't have to spray it at all.
Right.
You just plant it and do it.
Amazing.
And go.
Before we get into production, I've got to mention one thing which I thought was really interesting. You know, fig sack, fig latex, it's this whitish sap. Do you know that there's actually somebody who tested this out as a cure for warts?
Really?
They did. So fig sap can cause what's known as phytophotodermatitis, which is that if this sap gets on your skin and is exposed to sun's rays, it will cause a rash. It is potentially rather dangerous.
Okay.
Well, in one study, and we're not encouraging this, but in one study, they actually took this sap, they put it onto a wart, or onto warts, and it was only marginally less successful than cryotherapy, which, of course, is the usual freezing off of warts. And 11 of 25 patients actually experienced complete resolution of their warts. So it actually removed people's warts.
Nature's medicine. What
yeah,
can
once
I say?
Again, not recommending this, but just fascinating, this plant. Anyway, so tell me about fig production, because it is an easy crop to produce.
You know, again, back to an urban situation, which can be really harsh for us plant people. This is an easy one to grow. Like if you really want to start your garden and to be on the more edible side, and you're afraid of, you might have a brown thumb, this is the first thing you can try.
Mm-hmm.
It is really an easy plant to buy. And the two cultivars that are the most common one is the brown turkey. Isn't that the funny name?
My dad actually has one of those growing up.
Yes, brown turkey. I mean, that's grown all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless though of any fig that you buy, the leaves are really interesting. They have a nice texture to them. I can't say much that we've talked about so far, except for the grape is not much to look at, you know, mm-hmm. beauty wise, but the fig is beautiful because of its palmate looking shaped leaf.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't flower, though. It's a fairly large-sized plant tree. It can get up to 30 feet tall if you let it. But the beauty is you don't have to get it to bear figs. So, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Isn't it cool that all the figs we plant are females?
Yes,
I mean, we could plant the Capra figs, the males, but
you know,
we don't need to.
I'm glad that we can grow figs and not worry about what nature needs to do because of the Parthenocarpic biology, you know, mm-hmm. that exists. But a few things that you need to consider when growing figs is that they're easy to grow. We just talked about that. They love warm weather, good mm-hmm. for us in the South. But, you know, even if you're up north, you just have to take some precautions and protect it from mm-hmm. the harsh winter, you know. Us, however, we don't have to. We just plant it and grow. It thrives in the higher zones.
Right.
You know, but you can grow it in the colder zones as well.
My parents are growing it in Pennsylvania, and I know some people who grow it in Chicago, and it takes it takes some protection, but not an incredible amount.
No, and part of it is that it fruits on new wood.
Right.
And that is why. So in the cold weather, if it dies back a little bit, who cares? You know, you've just got a shorter plant, which is a good thing in backyard gardens. You might come across some cultivars that call it an ever-bearing one. So figs are not going to give you a fruit until the end of the season. But they're going to be, some of them are going to be ever-bearing. Have you ever heard of the breba or the breba fruit?
No, tell me.
Okay. So what sometimes figs tend to do is give you a fruit early in the season. Mm-hmm. And people think, wow, I've got an anomaly. You know,
right.
I've got something different. But what happens is that it's like a fake fruit, if you will. It doesn't taste as well. It doesn't ripen usually. It's just pick it off or cut off the branches. It just happens sometimes. But you will have cultivars that say it's an ever-bearing, and they may have figured out a way where that breba or breba, I can't understand how to pronounce it, if it's edible, you know, mm-hmm. if it's worth trying. And that one is Texas ever-bearing, you know, so mm-hmm. that's an interesting one that has the breba fruit. The other hard part that could happen is you have to keep the birds away.
Because
some with fruits, you can kind of pick it early mm-hmm. and it can ripen inside your house. The figs have to ripen on the plant before you can pick them. Once you pick them, they are not going to ripen mm-hmm. anymore. So the birds are going to be happy with you for for planting your fig. Now, we talked about brown turkey. There's also blackjack. Those two are very, very popular. You could choose, if your birds are really of an issue, you could choose one called green Isha, and it, or Marcellus, that stays green, and the birds are not encouraged to pick at it, to eat it, because it's green. Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting.
That is.
It is. Okay, so sun, 4 to 6 hours is all you need, or more, doesn't matter.
So it sounds like it goes to a little bit of shade.
It can, you know.
But best production, I'm assuming, is in full sun.
It is. It wouldn't mind some. Think about how the leaf shape is protecting the flowers and the fruit.
Right.
Okay, it is getting some shade, but it's not affecting the fruit at all, like some of our other ones that we've talked about. You know, you can plant a fig tree pretty deep. You know how tomatoes you plant, mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about that crown or anything. You just can plant it deep.
It'll just send out new roots
That's
from
right.
the shoot.
Same goes with the fig. You can
right.
plant it pretty deep. And so buying it as a bare root, which is what I recommend, but it's not preferred necessarily. Because of the nature of how easy it is to grow, you're going to find these for sale in garden centers mm-hmm. throughout the summer. I'm always going to advocate planting in the spring, but you can find them later in the summer and plant them, and they should be
fine. I was going to say, just a little bit of care.
A summer planting
is fine.
And because it grows 30 feet tall, who can pick, you know, from a 30
feet tall?
Have
you seen one
of these? I have, actually.
Okay.
I have. I've seen them when they're unmanaged. You know, they mm-hmm. get really kind of over the top.
So a little bit of pruning.
But you can, why not prune it to the ground?
Yeah.
Every year.
You could do that yearly.
Yes. Why not?
And since it's...
And in a small backyard garden, why not? That would be perfect. So this is one of those, I don't have much to say, you know, that you just prune it, water it, plant it in full sun, and enjoy the fruit, worry about the birds.
As I was going through the scientific sites, I haven't done on a couple of just, you know, regular old sites, people talking about it, and there's this one blog that said, so you want to start producing fruit? Let me tell you, the first plant that you should set out there is exactly what you said, the fig, because it takes nothing.
Nothing. And you feel a little victorious.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I will say, to harvest your figs, uh-huh. you really have to wait until they're brown. Okay. Because if they're the slightest bit green, I mean, why not tasting some of your fruit to see if it's worth picking? Because usually one or two is pretty representative of the rest of the plant. And to make sure that you've picked all this fruit and it's worth eating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a fun fact that this might make you laugh.
I'll prepare myself.
All right. So did you know how Figs made their first commercial product appearance in 1892 with what product? You're going to know.
The Newtons.
The Fig Newton.
Yeah.
I think that's how it became popular.
Yeah, it was originally called the Newton before it was called the Fig Newton.
I won't say how you know that, but...
Well, and by the way, I love Fig Newtons.
I do too. I do too. And they also have as much calcium as a cup of milk.
Really? Yes. Now that I didn't know.
Yes, as a one cup
of milk. But I did see them as being very nutritious. They're, you know, high fiber, obviously high sugar, mm-hmm. and quality sugar too.
Well, they're used a lot in baking mm-hmm. and as to replace sugar
right.
and to keep a product moist. And mm-hmm. they do have a short shelf life though. So that's...
Do you know what it is offhand?
I don't, but it's like a... I mean, from experience, I bet you it's just a few days.
Okay.
You know, which is unfortunate. Which, so you can share with your neighbors.
Part of the reason that we don't see them in grocery stores in the, as that fresh
that's right.
Produce as much because they won't store.
So I'm excited that we've introduced something that's fairly simple.
Yeah. Introduced a long time ago.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the plants we eat. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.